Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Circumstance. I'm your host, Gina Cafasso. This is our last episode in our series, Drawing on Serial Killers. I've had the pleasure of interviewing my friend, an incredible artist, and just all-around great person, Aaron Smith. It's been such a great experience being able to catch up with him and hear him talk about his passions, his father, his incredible career in the entertainment industry as a CG supervisor, as an animator, and now as a publisher working with his father. It was just such an honor to be part of this. I appreciate him so much, and I hope you enjoyed this series, and please listen to this episode. Thank you again. Bit about your collaboration with your dad and his process. Like, what is his process when he's working on something and your process when you're working on something?
His process is he gets up about 3 a.m. Oh, much like Jeffrey Katzenberger.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think he's getting up at like 3 or 4 in the morning. I don't know if that was always the case, but I know, you know, more recently he tends to get up very, very early and, you know, makes his coffee and then starts working. He's writing all day. My day is not very much different, but I'm likely doing one of many things. Maybe it's animation or visual effects or something. And I probably don't start till about 8. So, but come midnight, we're probably both still banging away at it.
Wow.
Actually, I don't know if he works that late, but he pretty much sits down. He's just working all day. And I think, you know, I give him feedback about that, but really I'm probably not any better. Although I think my tasks are a little bit different because I'm working with maybe a team or somebody else. Mine's more compartmentalized and I have closure. I've finished a shot in a movie or I've, you know, that stage is done, check, you know. With the book, you're doing a whole, you know, maybe you're writing 350 pages of something, which is probably starting at like 500 pages of something and gets whittled down. But it's not so clear. You're kind of discovering the path as you're going. But I think when he's working that long, I think there's a point where the return on investment starts to diminish, you know? Mm. And it may be, you may actually be retrograding in your productivity at that point. So I don't know if that's his case, but I've always kind of felt that. I know sometimes he feels a little bit like, oh, doing so much, you know? And I tried to encourage him to, hey, you know, I don't see you drawing as much anymore. Maybe you spend the first half of the day writing and the second half of the day drawing. And I know even I'll break up my tasks sometimes like that. I'm going to do this really like thought intensive process in the morning when I'm clear headed, you know, before decision fatigue, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But I'll do those things. And then like in the morning, I might be listening to music and figuring out things that take a lot of very logical thinking. And then in the afternoon, maybe I'm doing stuff that's more artistic and creative, and I can put on like audiobook or something where the words aren't a problem, you know? But I thought, oh, it might be good for him. Do your write. You kind of paint yourself into a corner, and then you literally switch over and you start drawing or painting or something. And your brain is now switch sides, and it's going through and it's processing. But that's the kind of thing when you stop working on something that I feel that the really great stuff kind of bubbles up, and the answers to questions, the wall you'd run into, suddenly you see a way around it or over it, or, you know, oh, that's it. Because you're doing something else and they just kind of boil in the background as you're doing something.
That's true too. I like using both sides of your brain too. Like when he's like, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately he's sort of a steam train and he's just full throttle and going. And I say, unfortunately, but I don't know if that's the case. He may be okay. I just, most of the times when, if he's having an issue with something, it's not like I'm saying, well, your writing is terrible. You know, you only stopped at 4 PM. It's nothing like that. It just is. Anytime I hear him when we talk a lot, and I hear him telling me, you know, oh, I'm tired, or there's this, or there's that, or, but then when you make a suggestion, he doesn't really want to stray from what he's doing because it's a pattern he's used to and familiar with, I think. But
and you mentioned earlier too about the book you wrote about Bob Crane, that he, you know, getting it in this format where people are like Xing it through and doing all these things. That, so how does he take to criticism now?
It depends. I found I was very cautious, at least early on. Sometimes I sort of forget to be as careful, but I try to take some time when I do stuff. And I think that's a little frustrating for him because I'm probably taking longer than he's expecting. But also, you know, I try to package everything up. So when I'm presenting it back to him, say, hey, you know, when I read this chapter, I really love this and this and this about it, but I feel like maybe the idea isn't clear, or maybe there's an idea that's clear, but, you know, you might be able to land that thought really well if you just flip these two things, or, you know, hopefully it's just small things. But sometimes if I can't get past a small comment, then it's like, if I get to a chapter that like, hey, I think this chapter needs some real work to it, it's, I can't get to that. That's such a difficult thing sometimes. So sometimes it's about going through and figuring out the right time for things. And, you know, and I think every set of notes I've sent, I usually go through in the beginning of it, I have a little preamble that says, you know, remember, this is why I'm here. I want to make sure that we're getting the best, that you're communicating all this great stuff that you've done. And because he is really great with that stuff. I think they're just little points. It's kind of like everybody's sort of like a piece of Swiss cheese. We have little blind spots that we can't see stuff. And if you're lucky enough to work with somebody where the holes in their Swiss cheese and the holes in your Swiss cheese align to where you have this complete thing now, mm-hmm. that's great, you know?
Yeah.
But because of those things, there's things we're just blind to, you know, that, oh.
I love that analogy too, because it's so true in anything we do.
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm in marketing and I'm kind of a one woman show right now, but I feel like a lot of times, like there's some things that I need someone else to look at. I need someone else to fill those holes because sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, this looks great. I've been so focused on it that I can't see beyond it. So, yeah. You know, that's a thing too. Like it's helpful when someone else can kind of be your eyes and ears and not be at it to critique you or criticize you, but it's just to help you. That's the difference, I think.
Yeah. Well, but that's even tricky to do as a person giving feedback.
Yeah.
To be able to make sure that you're in that mind state.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
If you have somebody's best intentions or best, you have the best intentions for somebody, it's such a different thing. What am I trying to get? I want to make sure this person, and you kind of have to tell yourself doing that, I think too, to make sure it's not all about your delivery.
Like you were saying, it's all in your delivery. You know, how you approach it, how you ease into it, knowing the person's personality too, because different people take it differently. Like I like direct feedback. Like I like, I don't like this. This is why, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
I'm that kind of person. Other people are like, they need to be coddled a little bit. I hate to say that, but they need to be eased into it maybe, where it's like, you're doing great. I just saw a couple little things, you know? So it depends on the person for sure.
You have to feel safe to a point, you know, or either safe or confident that like, well, I'm confident myself enough that you're not going to derail me or upset me. And that's okay too. But, you know, and a lot of times it's clarifying. I think one of the things, especially, well, I think Zodiac's really well done. But I do think because that started him off on a process where he just, I want to get all the detail out there. I want everything I find. So he's very quick to get those things out. And he wants to just tell and show and give all of these pieces. And I know my background is a little bit more, I want to make sure that the reader is engaged, you know, and that, like, what are things that engage me in storytelling? I'm not saying make it fictional, but how do you present your ideas? How do you lead up to create a little bit of tension or something? And, you know, not that we're looking for places to make tension, but if I say an idea here, as opposed to maybe at the end of the paragraph or the end of the sentence or the end of the chapter, is it going to lessen that idea? You know, if you're making a point, you want to get to the, you want to make that point at the very end and then stop talking.
Right. You know? Well, you want to engage your reader. I mean, that's what it is. I think in anything you do, you need to engage people first and then give them what you want. Like, you know, that kind of, you know, even in marketing too, like, you know, I have to engage people in terms of like awareness. Like, okay, do you want to know about this? If you do, boom, here it is. You know, it's that kind of approach. It seems very similar.
Yeah. And well, very much. And actually one of the books, I have like this little like series of books that don't seem related, that they kind of color the way I work a lot. But one of them is a book called Made to Stick by, I think it's Dan and Chip Heath, or maybe Chip and Dan Heath, these two brothers that I think they both work at Stanford. They did a series of books. But it's, if you haven't read it, I think you'd.
Yeah, I want to.
It's very, how do you boil an idea down? Where do you place things? You go from having a productive idea to something that now it starts to degrade. And, you know, it's really, really interesting how they go through and present their ideas in there. So I think of that a lot. And then there's actually a book, Robert McKee, who's famous for going around and doing these story. I think that's the name of his book. And he's just like, and all these screenwriters pay like $300 to go see him.
Oh, go see him. Yeah. Right.
You ever seen Adaptation? He's the guy that's yelling, and his Brian Cox plays him.
Oh, okay.
Some point, I think I had read or maybe listened to an audiobook or something. But I was going back through, I don't know what it was. I wanted to skim back through that at one point. And the beginning of the book, he's just, you could tell he's just on this tirade. And, you know, it's written, so it's, you know, hear his voice, but I'm like, it's a tirade. They don't teach the classics anymore, like this or that. Or da, da, da. And he riddles off rattles off this list of names. And I went, I should check those books out. And I looked at what did this guy write? This, and one of them was hope I get his name right. I think it's, I'm probably saying it wrong. But I think it's Lagos Agri, something like that. E-G-R-I, I believe. And he was, I think he was maybe a critic back in the 30s. Oh, a lot of what he's talking about are more plays. He'll refer to movies, and he's a huge fan of Ibsen. And he would go through and break down these scenes and, well, Nora does this and this, and you see how her character changes. But he has this focus on dialogue. And he had talked about, he's like, when you're writing dialogue, the important thing has to come at the end. Because when people talk, as soon as they hear what they're waiting for, they start to talk over the other person. Mm. And that's always stuck with me too. And it kind of goes in line with these other things. So that's probably a little bit of where I started with that idea. Mm-hmm. But it's been reinforced through these other things.
Interesting.
But I forget what that one's called. It like might be something like The Art of Dramatic Writing or something, but that didn't quite do it. But I really liked it was the level of, he's talking about communicating, you know, how people communicate.
But it's so true how people do that. And well, it's funny, like, I kind of can relate to that a little bit. I grew up in an Italian household. People think I'm a New Yorker because I talk really fast. I'm not. I was born in California. But because I think come from an Italian family and, you know, I was the youngest, if I wanted to say something, I better get it in quick. Otherwise, forget it. It's going to go out there somewhere and no one's going to hear me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I think it's just, I don't know, it's just how I talk now. But I think people, you know, sometimes go, I'm sorry, can you slow down? Like my mom specifically, because she's not hearing so well. Can you slow down? And I don't even realize I'm doing, I know, Gina, slow down. You're talking too loud. You're talking too fast. I can't get it. But it's interesting, though. I think communication is a big thing. Like you were saying, I think talking over, I think people do that a lot lately. Where they talk over each other when they're talking, because like you want to say what you want to say and you're relating to what someone's saying. So I'm going to get it in. I want to tell you what I think. And it's like,
well, it's not only important to be heard, but to be understood. So mm-hmm. And so sometimes you'll see people, they'll say something, but no, they have to keep saying and saying and saying it because they feel like they're not being, no, you don't understand what I'm saying. Mm. And that's, I mean, I think that's another human trait. It's more, more important to some of us than others. But, you know, there's a, going back to trauma, there is a big part of well-being that has to do with socializing, you know, and it just is, you know, we probably weren't intended to live in cities of millions of people where you can't have a relationship with everybody. You know, there was probably a point where it was like maybe a few hundred people at best or something. We were smaller tribes and you knew everybody and you had this, but there's a, I forget what they call this. When I was spending all this time with that friend of mine it was going through all the trauma, we were reading a lot about, I wish I could remember the phrase, but it's almost like playing tennis where you're hitting the ball back and forth. And actually that's one of the things, like we would throw a ball back and forth sometimes. It's okay. Interacting with somebody in a cadence is in, you know, and language does that. Dialogue communication and stuff does that, where you say something and there's a response and then you reply. And there's a sense of fitting in when you do that correctly. And
especially when people get engaged with you and react to you and like want to hear more. Like it helps kind of draw that out of you too, I think. I feel.
Yeah. You know, well, you feel a part of something, I think, is part of it too. And the fact that you've clearly communicated something. And there's a grounding that happens with that, you know, even though it's this sort of fluid thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I know sort of going to bring that around. There's early on when this trauma had happened, I was finding that, you know, this friend of mine just physically looked different. He wouldn't hold himself. He was sort of contorted and it was that painful for him. He couldn't talk at a normal rate. He would maybe stutter a little bit. Not like a heavy stutter kind of thing, but it was there. It was having trouble getting a word out or something. But there was a point early on when someone else had done something and it angered him. And when the anger came out, it was like all the pieces just snapped back together. And even though I don't think of him as an angry person, I don't really think I'd ever seen him angry before, but it just brought it back. And I think there was something about having that sense of anger. It gave him a sense of control. An autonomy that was missing probably also brought him right into that moment. But I remember, you know, kind of taking this back to, not to say this friend of mine is a serial killer, but he was through some trauma, you know, mm-hmm. And this is one route that seemed to kind of like put it in check. The Trailside Killer, David Carpenter, everybody would talk about, he has this stutter that he just couldn't stop stuttering. It was just, you know, debilitating. But when he would attack somebody, that would go away. And that always seemed very similar to that. So I'm sure his stutter is associated with some of his own trauma to some degree, probably more than to some degree. Mm-hmm. But when he would get in these situations, there was a hate, and probably in that, at the root of that is that it comes off as an autonomy and control, and you know, it allowed that stutter to go away.
Now, when you and your dad are doing all this research too, are you diving into the psychology then? It sounds like it, behind all these people.
Neither one of us.
Not too deep. Okay.
Psychologist. So I think he'll interview people and talk to them about that. Mm-hmm. I think I tend to kind of view things a little bit deeper. Mm. So I'm always thinking about that stuff. And I like to think like, oh, we're all humans. We all have the capacity to be good humans. But I'm sure there's some people that will never change or never have an inkling to change or to realize they should change or should they change? Like, so I don't know, but it is interesting. And like having that label for, like you said, for serial killers and having that taxonomy and mm-hmm. a way to think of things, it's very helpful. You know, I think somewhere down at the root of it that we've made all this complexity, but really they're very simple ideas that are at play. We're nibbling around the edges of the really simple thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that you may have been traumatized in many different ways, but at the root of it is probably something very similar, even though it's like there's maybe a more general concept there.
So what are some of the challenges or benefits of being Robert Gray Smith's son? And did that impact your career in any way? Or did you pretty much go, no, I'm doing this on my own? Or did it have any influence on your career whatsoever?
Well, the benefits, Cheetos, Fritos, and Doritos. I mean, right from the get-go. Yeah. I mean, he was always, you know, he's always been a fun dad. I think, I mean, some of the challenges are, he always wants to talk about what he's working on. So it's kind of, you know, if he's in that place and he's focused, or, you know, like I say, focused, air quotes, obsessed, you're going to go through that. You're probably going to hear the same stuff a lot of times and stuff, which is fine. I know that that's helping him with what he's doing. So I think being aware of that, when I hear my own kids tell me like, "Dad, you repeated yourself," I'm like, "Oh, you have no idea." You know, I think it's more challenging as an adult going through that stuff, just because, you know, well, sometimes there's some things that are hard to get him to talk about. So if I want to, like, you know, he'll just deflect, he'll be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And like,
he just like avoids it. It's like an avoidance kind of thing, or what is it?
No, I don't know. Maybe there's just something. I don't even know if he's aware that he does it. And I don't know how conscious it is or not, but that maybe something he doesn't want to talk about or answer or whatever. And I think sometimes it'll come back later. It's like, "Oh, hey, you were talking about that thing. What if we blah, blah, blah." So I think he is listening, but it's not, he's a very trained, full steam ahead kind of guy, you know?
Got it.
But, you know, and the benefits, I'm really glad that we're getting a chance to work together. It's a little tricky sometimes. You know, at some point he's not going to be here, and I'm really glad that I've gone through these things with him. I've asked him questions. I've, you know, pushed back in some places or challenged him. What's this about? Or could you do this? You know, but knowing what he's trying for in a lot of these things. So at some point when he's not there to finish them, hopefully I can, you know, do a good job of keeping it within his voice and intent, you know?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And do you think there's like two different hats for you, like son hat, publisher hat, or do you just like, is it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I don't think he sees the difference.
Oh, got it.
There's very much. And I think a little bit as publisher, sometimes I think of the publisher as being like a producer working with a director, you know, and it's the producer's job to make sure that we get the director's vision, but in a timely manner and on budget, you know. Mm-hmm. And not that we have a budget and all that, but it's, hey, we got to get out there. What are all the bells and whistles? You know, one of the other hats I'm wearing at the same time is, oh, I'm also the technician and I'm spot checking things. And, you know, there's editing, but then there's copy editing and there's, you know, mm-hmm. you know, dotting I's, crossing T's, doing all that kind of stuff. And then
the also the legal contract side too, you're doing that too. So yeah.
Contracts. Yeah. You know, the business and the actually, how does the book get formatted and, you know, creating book covers and stuff like that and writing the jacket copy and stuff like, how do you've got this 300-page book. I have to condense it down to like, you know, one paragraph, like, you know, like an ad. So they do like a 2-minute ad, a 30-minute, right, a 30-second ad, and a 15-second ad. And it's the same kind of thing. Like, this has to work in this many words or this many paragraphs, or, you know, oh, here I can use 4,000 words. Here I can only use 250, you know?
Oh, wow.
So how do you go through and have that written in a way that is compelling and gets the concept across, but also very quickly kind of gets all those ideas shoved into this, you know, mm-hmm, little amount of space. So actually some of those I've been pretty happy with how they came together. So they're intriguing, and it's been a chance. I don't know if you realize this quite how much stuff I have my hands in and I'm doing, but it's been a good, like, all right, well, I'll try it. You know, it's like, where you just say yes to everything. Like,
yeah,
have you ever done this? Will you try this food? Will you do that? It's a little bit of that. And
yeah, well, you know, what's so interesting. You and I are both Capricorns. We're actually born on the same day. So I see a lot of similarities with you in terms of that. Like, I'm very much like that too. Like, I have my hands in all these different things, but I want to master all of them. Like, it's like, I don't want to just be like, okay, or mediocre in whatever area. I want to make sure that I'm doing it. And from front to back, like, I have to finish something when I start it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that sense where I'll go back to that later. It's not in me. It's not in me.
I have a little bit of each of those.
Yeah. Okay.
I got plenty of stuff I know I'm coming back to.
Right. Right.
It will get completed, but it kind of depends what I'm doing too, what place I'm in, you know. And that's, I think that's one of the things I like about doing VFX and the animation, is because somebody is, there's a box, you know, well, I have to fit within this thing. And then a lot of times that's where creativity comes through. What's the best I can do within this time frame, or with this, you know, the tools that I have, or the look of this thing, or, you know, so I really appreciate doing that, you know. Mm-hmm. I think one bit of advice I'd have for anybody trying to take on a big project is do a small project first. And even if it's just something you're never going to show, just do it, start it, and complete it, and do it as quick as possible, and make as many mistakes as you can along the way. Because if you're doing a big project, you're trying to write a novel or make a movie or create a video game or whatever, you don't want to learn those as you're, like, you know, neck deep in all of this stuff. And it's, you're in the ocean, do it while you're in the pond, you know?
Right. I think you and I both too, like, we started doing shorts, like, you did short animation, I did short movies when I was first starting out, like, in that biz, you know, and we had friends that did the same thing. You know, we had a lot of, we were surrounded by those creative kind of people all the time, which was awesome. I mean, it was just great. Kind of, you kind of, cause you fed off each other, which is good. And so that kind of goes back to the social thing too. Like, I totally agree with that. You know, I mean, it depends on who you surround yourself with too, that either bring you up or bring you down too. I mean, it could be both.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's a big piece of, I think.
I tell my kids that all the time. I say, if you've got people that you enjoy doing your work with, your stuff, there's something, if you're creating something or whatever, like, stick with them, you know, especially if you guys vibe off of each other. And, like, there's so many times in history you can go back and go, oh, there's just an explosion of these, like, artists or filmmakers or novelists. And they all knew each other, you know? And, but it's not like, well, like, I got his book deal because the other guy got a book deal. It's like, no, they're all better for having known each other.
Right.
And it probably didn't hurt that one of them did well or something. And then, but you can see that all throughout history, there's little, just these little
eyes. That's so true.
Bursts. So
even the serial killer is kind of, no, just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm not putting that in. You said, though, that there's 40 titles, 40 releases, or you're working on.
So I know
you're out there right now.
I know at one point I clearly had gone there. I was like, that can't be right. It's, and I was like, oh, nope, we're at 34. But then we put out Graveyard Harbor. So
35.
But then he counted up one point to 40. And then I think some of those are, maybe some of those might have been book ideas, or maybe he has a short story that was, he had planned to expand. So I'm not totally sure, but I'm pretty sure, at least within that 33, 34, there were, you know, there's more true crime. There's historicals, as we were talking about.
I like them, historical. You know, that's great.
Which are, you know, historical crime.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a couple of children's books that he's illustrated.
Not all of these are out yet, though.
No, I mean, no. These are all the ones that have never been seen.
Oh, these are the ones that have never been seen. So these are possibly coming soon. Is that what we're saying? Sort of, kind of?
They'll eventually, you know.
I like it.
And one of the tricks is, I think he's developed as a writer as he's come along. And I think Zodiac's well written. But I think he's like, this is how you write a sentence, like a brushstroke, you know, this is a paragraph. And this is how he has his style for how he does that stuff. And should sound like this. He reads his stuff out loud all the time. And a lot of times he'll catch little things. He'll change it because of the way it read out loud.
And do you have audiobooks where he's actually speaking?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's cool.
We haven't put one out. I have one that's recorded, autofocus. But there's a couple of things that I need to catch up with him on to get. Okay. So at some point that won't be a thing when we're like, oh, I need a little AI tool that'll just fill in that word.
That's true. That's something we didn't talk about is AI and how that's impacting your business. Like working in animation, how AI has either bettered it or changed it or made it work. You know, like there's so many people afraid that AI is going to take over and there'll be no human jobs.
Well, so, I think it depends on your viewpoint. And it's true. Yeah. Like people have already lost their jobs because of AI. Yeah. Even when it's not clear what the AI is doing to make up for those roles. But I mean, just this week, PlayStation laid off, I think like 800 people. And then there was, I can't remember, there was another game company that just laid off some huge amount. I think Paramount just laid off a ton of people. They just keep going through. And it's, I have all these feelings about how Wall Street works. And it's never going to, you're making a profit on a profit, but it can't, it's not sustainable, you know? And to make it sustainable, that's why we have inflation. But I'm also not an economist.
Yeah. But disclaimer right there.
But for instance, there's a point, it's not sustainable. And as soon as so you have years where the company actually truly does well, they've sold more, whatever it is, and they make a profit. But now the next year, they haven't made the same profit through that avenue. So you pay people less, or you lay them off, or you find somebody overseas. And so you've done that to manage out your profit. So now the following year, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. You can't like, hey, you know what? We're going to hire back all those people on the American side and pay them these fair wages. But you can't do that because it's going to go against. It's the whole reason you fired them in the first place.
Right.
So there's a point of really likely no return. You know, I think there's probably ebbs and flows in there where they do hire people back.
But it's now it seems to me like AI is really repetitive. Like my brother, for instance, like when he did his real estate stuff, he said, hey, Gina, help me write some things. So I was playing with AI just to see. And every single time it's like, welcome to this address. And it was the address. And so then we went on the MLS and you saw all these listings of homes that he did welcome to. And I'm like, they're all using it.
Yeah.
So it's like cookie cutter kind of. So I'm trying to think what that word is, like where it's, you know, like it's going to be so similar that there's going to be no uniqueness is kind of what I'm getting at.
But oh, common.
I guess it's common, but I just felt weird saying that.
Well, it's easy and it's quick and it's seeping its way into every crack and crevice. You know, it's not to say that the tools aren't bad. It's the way that they're used and it's the way that they've been built is where the trouble is. I mean, CG stuff, there's a big outlash. CG, you'll never look good. And, you know, CG looks good. You know, you've seen so much stuff you don't even realize was not real. But there's a lot of people that probably lost their jobs for that. And some retrained, but there's a lot that I'm sure that was it. That was the end of their livelihood in that business. You know, when we first started doing CG, you'd do a movie and it's just a handful of shots. You know, and I think when I was at Sony, we did some stuff on that Godzilla in 1997. I think we only did about 100 shots. It, something like that. That was a big, big deal at the time. You know, now like you're doing thousands of shots. It's not, you know.
But you need people to monitor it. I think that's kind of what I'm getting at too.
That's the difference.
See it. Yeah. And go, okay, that looks good. Okay. That's off. That person has three legs or that person has six fingers, whatever it is. You know, you need people because it hasn't evolved to the point where it can stand.
Yeah.
I feel.
Well, I think you got to use some common sense at the same time though. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately you can't use the phrase, do your research. That's kind of been misappropriated as well. But
yeah, that's true.
But really, like, this isn't anything new. It's just more sophisticated. You know, you look at William Randolph Hearst, like, oh yeah, you know, and the DeYoung brothers, they can put whatever they want in the papers. That was the word, you know. Mm-hmm. As a culture, we've become more sophisticated. We've seen special effects. You know, think about the movies you saw when you're a kid. You're like, oh, I'm so scared of that, blah, blah, blah. It was so realistic. You see it now, you're like, it's clearly a puppet, you know.
Exactly.
Because as the effects have gotten better, your eyes got more discerning and more sophisticated.
Well, Star Wars is a good example of that too, because originally, I mean, it was actually pretty good special effects even back then though.
Some of it are pretty solid.
Yeah. But I have to say, like, it's changed so much. I mean, it's still some of the same old school kind of, you know, technique that they've used, but a lot of it, you know, it's just evolved a lot.
It's a lot faster. And even like, you know, having done short films on a downshooter and knowing like, oh, I need to do a double exposure or I want something to glow. And so that's actually like a series of steps you have to do to make that happen, and of masking and rewinding the film and doing all this. Well, on a computer, I have something that just says over. I put A over B, these two different layers, and they sandwich. I know mathematically what that's doing. And because I worked in the downshooter, I know, well, that's the A over B is, well, I would have had a mat to do this. And now I have the opposite of that mat. Now, well, you don't have to paint those things and do those things. You have them in there. And if you're doing 3D, it's generated automatically. And, you know, so I remember working on, I can't remember, I think it was Stuart Little, maybe it was Godzilla or something, but I remember working John Dykstra, who was like the guy on Star Wars. He was working with us on Stuart Little and came by. And I remember him walking by, leaning his arm on my shoulder and seeing Stuart sitting there in the dark. And he's looking at, and he goes, look at that mouse. That mouse is there. It's like we filmed him on set. It was just so awesome. Like,
oh,
my God, so this, cool. You know, John's this really tall guy and everything. but I remember working on that and thinking, and at that point, just, you know, probably like 3 a.m, thinking about, do this simple little thing I just did would have been this and that and this and that and all these different layers. And, you know, it's crazy how much stuff would have gone into it. I actually just watched a documentary the other day, and they were talking about making the birds, and these production designers reminiscing about it. And they're like, remember to do this shot with the birds and doing this. That was 42 different elements to do that. That was the biggest shot ever done at the time. And it's, I think it's where the birds are over Bodega Bay, and there's the fire in the background, and like, but it was all these different passes. And like, I understand that now. I do that just, it's just a couple lines of code, you know?
Oh, wow. What a difference.
Because it's been made a very simple, simple thing to do. So, but what happens with that is then, because I can do more, the appetite expands in a different way. I can add more, I can plus things, or you fill that void, you fill that box. And I think at some point, the AI tools will be great. Hopefully they'll become more ethical, and they'll be more closer to still being an artist, you know? Hey, you know, like, I'd love to go back in and actually create something from scratch, have a team of people saying, okay, today we're just dealing with brush strokes, you know, and we're going to do this and this and this. And how would you work with that in a way that, like, I want to create something realistic, or I want to create something that's more creative or painterly or whatever. And, but just how you would tackle that and approach it. And what point is that like, I want to focus on this, and I want this other stuff to kind of generalize, you know? And even in 3D, we do that. We're like, you're going to make something very complex. Well, you're going to build something and then make a couple variations of it. And you're going to scatter those everywhere. But really, you only have like 3 to 10 different versions of something. But you've got millions now. And they all seem unique. But really, they're just or whatever. So, wow.
I mean, I don't know. The technology of animation in general, to me, blows my mind. Like, how realistic everything looks now. I remember working at PlayStation, and some of the games, they were really starting to look lifelike. But now, you almost can't tell a human from a character in a PlayStation game. It's changed so much. And who knows, 10 years from now, what is it? what is it going to look like?
Yeah. Well, it may be something completely different. You know?
Yeah.
We will have some other technology that'll, you know, but really every time we make a big breakthrough in technology, they just take that one bit of technology and they spread it everywhere. It's just changed all the other things. It hasn't really created a new concept.
You know? That's true. That's very true. Has anything anything surprisingly maybe that you learned or discovered by even talking to me and doing this podcast?
I found it really helpful to talk, because like, my kids don't want to talk to me about this stuff. Hey, it'd be helpful. I start going through and actually writing a lot of this stuff down, and I realized it's important to me. I don't know if it's a story I needed to share, or that I have in such a format or, you know, arc to it that makes sense. I haven't, at some point I'll see it and I'll be very thankful I've done all that. But I know there's a point when I'm going through there that I always sort of stop. And I think that there's these little points from, oh, I went off on a different tangent in my life at that point. You know, those things haven't stopped.
Are you talking about like writing your life story? Is that what we're talking about?
Because, well, specifically, you know.
Oh, okay, got it. Okay.
You know, if I write about animation and stuff, that's a whole different thing. But as I've been researching, it's like when I go and I write down those dates and stuff, like, oh, I know these things, I have these facts, I have these memories, but at least while they're still there. But as I've been going through talking with you about this, it's been really helpful just to talk to somebody and kind of like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that, or this or that, or some other idea I wasn't thinking about pops up that I now relate and push into it, you know?
Did you kind of feel like when you were growing up, I mean, I get the feeling you didn't really feel like the Zodiac was the backdrop, you know, for when you were younger. But looking back, do you kind of feel it was the backdrop of your childhood? Maybe at the time you didn't feel, but now looking back, does it feel like that was a big piece of it, or not at all? Or just a little piece of it?
Yeah, I think it was always there, but in between was, you know, going to school and hanging out with friends and seeing movies and playing with toys and, you know, exploring the Berkeley Hills and visiting my cousins, whatever. Like, there are all these other things. You know, life is not that, I don't think life is that focused. At least mine isn't. I think, you know, you were talking about there's not time enough to do everything. I always have this idea of like, well, I wish we lived to be 300, you know? And then you could spend 30 years learning and perfecting something. I am a top surgeon, you know? Oh, now I'm going to be a lawyer, and I'm going to be an artist or a pilot, or I'm going to learn to sing or play guitar, whatever it is. You didn't feel like you had to pick one thing to do. Probably the most successful thing is to pick one thing to do. But I like being curious.
You have the ability to be able to do all those things in a lifetime. Yeah, it would be a interesting.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, here I am. So you were asking about that being the backdrop, and here I am, I'm 53. And it's like, oh, we're still talking about Zodiac, you know?
Yeah, see? So it still kind of is a prevalent thing.
It's not going to go away. Like I said, I don't think there'll ever be any real closure to it. But other than what you allow yourself to say, like, yeah, there's the guy. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's not going to change anything at this point. He's not out there killing people, other than people that were directly affected by it, feeling like they have some closure because he was caught or whatever. But I don't know if it's going to change anything at this point to actually do that.
Yeah. What lessons or messages do you hope listeners take away from this podcast?
I don't know if I've said it in there or not, but like, you know, let the world be a better place for you having been in it. It's make your time having been here mean something. We don't know what happens after this, but you've got now, you can be great. You can help people. You can look out for other people and do nice things and whatever it is, whatever that means, just to, when things balance out in the end, make sure that it tips in the positive.
I love that. And that's what you are too, Aaron. I've known you for many years and you've always been just a positive light guy. I mean, you just are, you always have been, but that's my last question for you. So I just want to thank you for being on the podcast. I know we had a little hiccup. I maybe won't say what that was, but yeah, that was my fault. But anyway, no, I really appreciate you coming on and talking and being so open about your childhood, your career, your dad, your working relationship with him. It just is like, it's a great story. And, you know, I look forward to more of his books and I look forward to your life story coming out at some point.
Well, it'll come out when it comes out, when it feels right. But
yeah, there you go.
You know, this will definitely have been a step in it. Look for yourself in the acknowledgments. And
Hey, why? Thank you. Oh my God. I'm so honored. That's so nice. No, but this is great. I really appreciate you as a friend, and we've known each other for some time, but every time I think of you, I think of you as my brother. Like, you're like a brother to me, and my brother feels the same way.
I like your brother. So it's a compliment. Yeah.
But thank you again.
Oh, certainly. And congrats on Circumstance. This is great to see you doing this.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
I hear you doing this.
Thank you for listening to the Circumstance Podcast. I hope you will continue this journey with me as I explore various life circumstances to help inform, inspire, and educate. To hear more episodes, subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. See you next time on Circumstance.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at Aura.com/safety. That's AURA.com/safety.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.